First thing I wanted to get into is, you know, sadly, these are obviously hyper-partisan times, and I kind of wanted to ask you what you see as kind of like the main philosophical distinction between Democrats and Republicans in the state of Illinois specifically, and kind of why you're a Democrat.
Sure. Well, I mean, there certainly is a huge party divide right now. It's very polarized, even down, you know, in our districts. They're down to that level, things are being really polarized as far as party distinction. And you know, I'm not sure how we got to this point. To be quite honest, I think it's a lot of things. It's a lot of things that have gone on. You know, whether it be COVID and how things were handled, or even going back further, you know, just with different leadership and things like that here in the state of Illinois, that I think has divided, you know, maybe that bipartisanship a bit more than what it has been. I mean, you can look way back, and then there was the two parties were much closer. I feel like in the past, a while back, than they are right now. But you know, as far as myself is concerned, I mean, I'm just more of a liberal thinker. I mean, but I always tell people I have a very open mind. You know, in the primary, I was kind of positioned as being non-progressive in that sense. And but it's more to me less about things like that and more about just being open-minded and being able to listen to everybody. And we may agree to disagree on things, and that may just be the case. But for me, you know, I believe in the helping the people as much as humanly possible. You know, I believe in a better healthcare system and things like that. And I'm sure we'll get into that as we discuss through the things. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's, you know, I've always been an open-minded thinker, and that's really has kind of what put me in the Democratic Party or in the Democratic mindset. Mm-hmm.
And kind of related, something that seems more apparent is that rural areas seem to heavily trend towards Republicans, and more urban areas seem to lean more heavily towards Democrats. And as someone who is from a rural area like yourself and a Democrat, why do you think it is that so many people that live in small towns in the country tend to vote for Republicans these days?
That's a really good question. I'm actually so I've been in rural Illinois most of my life, but I've also lived in Chicago and worked in Chicago for many years, where I met my wife. And you know, so I've seen both sides of it, and I believe it's just, you know, there's different ways, you know, business and things like that. We're more agricultural down here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's some I don't want to say older mindsets, but you know, you kind of grow up. I'm in marketing. That's kind of what I've always done in my career. There's a lot of marketing and operations, and marketing is always the same thing. And I tell the same story all the time is, you know, if your parents use Crest toothpaste, for instance, and you grew up using that, there's a higher distinction that you will probably use Crest toothpaste as you get older, and then your kids and so on and so forth. It's just, you know, it's partially how we've grown up down here or in rural areas and things like that. So I think part of it's just the mindset, but I think that there's, quite honestly, the mindset's changed even over the last 11 years that I've been living here in West Central Illinois. I've seen a lot more openness, a lot more ability to have open minds to new opportunities and new things that are going on. So as much as we want to say, and it is, the 93rd district is a red district, and there's no question about that, but I've seen growth in a lot of areas across the 93rd district over the past 10, 11 years that I've been here, where it's, I think we're seeing people open to new thoughts and new ideas and open to at least listening. And that's where I hope that we're continuing to trend to in the future, because I think that that has the ability to help everybody.
Hmm. And why don't we talk a little bit about healthcare? Reading statements I've read from you in the past, I get the feeling that you feel there needs to be more government oversight of the healthcare industry. And I know, based on your profession, you know a little something about this. What would a more ideal healthcare system look like in your opinion?
Well, honestly, it comes down to being as simple, and I know it's kind of a cliche thing to say, but just a more affordable, accessible plan, or a more affordable, accessible healthcare system in general, is what we really need to see. Now, we can talk all day about Medicare for all, that, you know, a lot of people talk about that. You know, you can talk about single payer system. But quite honestly, I've always been one, just being in the healthcare industry, where I've been able to see how involved the insurance companies and the drug manufacturers and the lobbyists that work for them, how involved that they get at the state level to essentially call the shots in our healthcare. And when they're calling the shots, they're thinking about it from a profit standpoint, not from a your individual health standpoint. And I think that that's the first step that we need to take. That's the first step I know I would be looking at taking if elected, is to start removing those thought processes. And, you know, you called it government oversight, and I guess it could be, I suppose. But I think it's not so much about that, but it's taking out the pieces that are pumping up the negative pieces that come out to our constituents. I have healthcare just and insurance just like anybody else, and the premiums consistently go up, and the drug prices consistently go up. So that's the first thing we need to do, is we need to get back to a level playing field where we're not constantly being tugged at from the lobbyists and the insurance companies that are increasing all of our costs and making things less affordable, not only less affordable, but less accessible, especially to our seniors and the people that really need ongoing healthcare. Whether it be in-home healthcare or just, you know, nursing healthcare, things like that. So those are big pieces to what we have to start with. Now, it would be great to see if we could get to where there is a single-payer system that is accessible to people. That doesn't mean that you're taking out all the private insurance or anything like that. I'm just I'm merely saying that it would be great if we could get to a point where there was an accessible healthcare plan that was available for everyone to use if they qualified for that.
I think you've said that the greatest challenge over the next decade or so for the state of Illinois would be the state debt and budget, and I think a lot of people would agree with you. Are there any broad strokes proposals that you have for how you would address the ballooning state debt in the years to come?
Sure. Well, the first thing that I would do is obviously look at our current debt situation, our current debt status, you know, with the long-term and short-term debt situations. We do it here where I work, and that's what I'm involved in as well, is looking at how can we set ourselves up for kind of a better tomorrow, if you will. We need to begin looking from a state level and from a legislator level in a needs versus wants situation. So right now we're setting our appropriations and our debt for wants, not for the needs of the people. You know, when we talk about the needs of our education and state funding some of our educational districts and schools and things like that versus where we want to put the money. And I always liken it to, if you've ever had to tighten your belt, in your life whether it's to buy groceries or do this or that, it's what we have to do here, where we've gone away from the ideals of having a good structured budget and sticking to it. And we've gone to, well, this is what we want right now, and this is where we're going to appropriate the money and the funds. So the other piece of it that I believe is going to help us, at least in some standpoint, is, of course, the progressive tax amendment that's sitting out there right now is, we need to find an influx of money that has not been currently available to all of us while not raising the taxes on our middle and lower class citizens. Those types of situations, we need to find a influx of revenue that is not currently there to help with the budget and the debt structure that we have right now.
Speaking of new revenue, I guess I'll ask you about the graduated income tax amendment that voters will be voting on. I guess the concern among some is that rates could be changed by just a majority vote in the General Assembly if a graduated income tax went into effect, and then kind of what was billed as a middle-class tax cut could turn out to really be a hike. Do you think, is that something that you worry about, or just generally, where do you come down on the progressive income tax?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think if you're worried about that, in the graduated income tax, if it's passed through in November, you should be worried about it now, and you should have been worried about it in the years past, because that's what legislators can do right now. So it just goes to show you that it doesn't have to happen. It doesn't mean it will happen. It just means that there's always been that ability to, increase even a flat tax like we're in right now. And the flat tax system, it can be increased the same way. So You know, I think that's always out there as a potential. But mm-hmm. as far as what we're looking at going forward and why I feel like the graduated tax system would benefit the state of Illinois and benefit the folks here in the 93rd District is simply because we have 99% of our residents here in the 93rd District fall in the middle and lower class structure, fall under that $250,000 range. So 99% of the people are going to see their taxes stay the same or have a moderate decrease. And that's a huge benefit to everybody because that helps boost our economy. That means that there's extra money to take your family to the movies or to go out to eat and do the things that we want everybody to do. In the state of Illinois, there's only 97%. So there's only 3% that are falling above that $250,000 threshold, as it were. And I always liken it to the other states in our country. I mean, 32 states in the country use a graduated tax and progressive tax system and do it successfully. We've got neighboring states that use it successfully and have been able to put money back into not only their schools, but their infrastructure and things of that nature that are, again, the wants of the citizens of that state. So I feel like being able to, I mean, our debt right now is $5.5 billion. This has the potential, and I say the potential because anything can change and anything can be, you know, your projections can always be off by a little bit, but it's, you know, they're projecting what, $3.5 billion of new tax revenue based on this to come back in. You know, that's a huge benefit to, again, going back to your former question of how do we fix the budget? That's a big chunk of it to be able to try to fix those budget areas. So,
before we run out of time, I wanted to ask you, I think a lot of voters in downstate Illinois sometimes agree with the Democratic Party on a lot of issues, and they want to vote for Democratic candidates, but then they can get turned off because they fear party leaders like Speaker Michael Madigan will maybe dictate how they vote. I know some people on the right maybe demonize him, but he is in kind of a ethical turmoil perhaps right now. What can you say to, I guess, assure voters that you'll be able to act and think independently of the speaker's influence if you are elected?
Sure. Well, you know, I'll tell you, the easiest thing to say is that I in business, you build mission statements when you have a business. And that's what I did when I first decided to run for state representative. And my mission has never changed over time. And it won't, and I'm not one to back down, regardless of who's there. But I always vote, you know, I'll tell you my mission statement in just a second, but my, you know, the two things I always have said that I will do is I will always vote my district and I will always vote my conscience. And that's just a morality issue for me. And I don't know that I could put my head on my pillow at night and not try to be morally correct with the decisions when you have to make decisions for the good of the people that have elected you. So, you know, my mission statement that I went into this with and has never changed is to represent the 93rd District in a respectful, action-oriented, and forward-thinking manner, and to be a representative that cares for every person and puts the needs and interests of the people above all else. And I think that speaks to somewhat of what you're talking about as far as influence being, thrown down.
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott Stoll, Democratic candidate for the 93rd District State Representative, appreciate your time today. Thank you so much, especially, you know, these are interesting times, I guess. How has campaign, before I let you go, how has campaigning been in these unique times where you're...
Unique is a good word for it.
Yeah.
It's certainly a different time, but it's different for everybody. Everybody has the same issues. It's a little bit more difficult for somebody like me who's not an incumbent to get out there and, you know, get your name recognition out there and try to show people what you're doing. But, you know, it's a lot of mail and it's a lot of, uh-huh. I'm sure people have seen my face all too often in their mailboxes, I'm sure. But, you know, it comes down to a lot of mail, a lot of phone calls and good people that are helping in the campaign to get our letters out that I've personally approved on and things like that. So, you know, we just taking some different tactics as we go along, but I think everybody's in the same place.
Right.